While the question of just how non-living chemical reactions can result in a living cell is still unanswered, another avenue of exploring the concept of abiogenesis is progressing, and holds potentials above and beyond merely understanding the process in which abiogenesis occurs. This is the concept of synthetic life, and this field offers the possibility that while we may never meet an alien in space, we may de facto meet something like one in a laboratory here on Earth, and we may do it very soon. In 2010, the world's first synthetic life form was created, though that may have been an overstatement. It wasn't created from scratch, rather it was a kind of parts microorganism made from new manufactured DNA and bits of other microbes. It's probably better to term it an artificial species. What the scientists did was create a completely new and artificial genetic code and then inject it into a pre-existent cell. This was actually a bit dangerous, because what if such a thing happened to escape into the environment? And it was even encoded with markers just in case it did, and we'd know it. The value of this work was enormous. Number one, it can help answer the question of the minimum number of genes needed for viable life to function on. And it can also open up the door for novel manufacture of vaccines, chemicals, and so on, by artificial species designed to synthesize them. It also opens the way for creating truly artificial life that cannot have come to be solely by nature itself, whether on an alien planet or here. Imagine improved life over what nature itself exhibits. I can only imagine the Pandora's box this video will open in the comments, but the reality is that life as we know it on Earth is not perfectly designed. A fine example of this is the most common carbohydrate on Earth and humans. While we may have amazing brains for this world, we don't have amazing digestive systems and we can't digest cellulose. In other words, we can't eat wood, despite the ability both being of great evolutionary advantage if we could, and there being a host of organisms on this world, like the termite, that can. A termite in a forest does not go hungry, but a human can, especially in winter. But there are others. We can't drink the vast majority of water on this world because it's seawater. We can't survive long in Antarctica without a coat, and so on. We only have what we needed to continue to reproduce. But we are not optimal creatures for our environment, other than our ability to create technology to get past the problems that our deficiencies create, such as the need for central heating in our homes, which is something that all animals when in their natural habitat don't need. Rabbits do not start fires for warmth, nor do temperature-sensitive crocodiles fashion jackets and stylish cold weather gear out of their prey. Rather, life makes do and everything lives within their respective environments except us. We no longer live in a gorge in Africa because we can invent and move outward. But the reality is, most of us live in climates or areas that are entirely dependent on technology to be livable. Without central heating, or before that, fire, we'd have a problem in cold climates given that we're a warm climate species. But genetically speaking, it wouldn't be that hard to alter ourselves so we could, by adding enough hair or some natural antifreeze which some life on Earth actually has developed. It has been said that for us to truly colonize a place like Mars, we will need to alter our genetics to be more suited to that planet. Given that in nature we're only suited for a small fraction of our own garden world, much less Mars, we may actually have to go so far with this that the altered humans bred to live on Mars would no longer be Homo sapiens sapiens, but a new subspecies, entirely created artificially. While a true, unambiguous case of the creation of artificial life from scratch has yet to come along, work on protocells, non-living precursors to cells, is ongoing. But we have created artificial cells that do not exist in nature, but it might be more correct to term them artificially altered cells. As to the former, that's usually termed synthetic life rather than artificial, and would involve an organism made from the ground up that could capture energy, contain information storage capabilities, and all the other hallmarks of a living cell. We're not there yet, and it probably lies in the distant future. And there's another option. A cell so synthetic that it's made entirely from non-biological materials that nature may or may not use, meaning a kind of synthetic microbial robot, at least of sorts. This blurs a line with nanotechnology, but would still mimic a living cell's function and design, just perhaps with better materials than nature provides. The other top-down approach has been achieved by the 2010 cell work. However, there is more recent work in this area. In 2016, scientists were able to edit the genome of a microorganism that had 482 genes naturally, but they were able to remove 100 of those and streamline its DNA. The organism saw an improved growth rate to its wild counterpart, and subsequently it was also done for E. coli. Even further was the creation of an artificial cell of sorts by emptying a cell membrane of its DNA, but leaving other components and inserting completely artificially created DNA. This organism was of particular interest because it's actually able to replicate. This may be the first instance of a truly self-replicating piece of von Neumann-style technology ever produced by humans. Within a medical context, things sometimes called artificial cells are already developed. But they aren't cells in the living sense, but mimic some functions of cells in order to deliver drugs. There is a bright future for the further development of these technologies, in everything from pain management to pancreatic cancer, one of the most notoriously difficult to treat forms. So the science of the cell goes both ways. In nature, it allows us to understand life and diseases like cancer, but it can also be turned into treatments for diseases on a microscopic scale. But the idea of creating entirely artificial DNA has implications far beyond microorganisms. That technology allows for custom genomes that can do all sorts of things. You could make entire animals that don't exist in nature. Think carrot trees, micro zebras, the rhino cat, or other abominations. This would also hold profound possibilities for de-extinction. One reason we can't easily bring back species of dinosaurs is because the DNA is gone. DNA has trouble lasting 100 years in a specimen. Asking for it out of a 66-plus million-year-old fossilized dinosaur bone is a step too far, and the information left in birds is incomplete. But that's not to say tissue can't survive. In recent years, a number of reports of surviving dinosaur soft tissue being found in dissolved fossils have been made. But if you have a sufficiently complete understanding of DNA, its function, and how the information contained therein creates a complete organism, you could probably reconstruct a dinosaur's genome, and perhaps even create one from scratch in the far future. 3D printing out a velociraptor may not be something anyone ever does, but it might give us an insight in modeling alien life and what that might be like. Also within this work, we are likely to find insights into how abiogenesis occurred, and we may have a clue from an obscure, mysterious experiment done a long time ago. In the 1950s, researchers in India were working with synthesizing amino acids using sunlight as the energy source. By 1963, they were working with a complex chemical soup under constant agitation in sunlight, and something surprising happened. Within the mixture, microscopic spherules formed that showed some of the functions of life. In fact, it was initially reported as life and as an artificial abiogenesis. Scientists were skeptical of this, and it cast a pall on the research, and it's since been shown that they were not alive, but they were something very close to it, and were clearly related to life in some way. Called jivanu, which is Sanskrit for particles of life, these spherules can be more accurately be called a protocell rather than a proper cell. They resemble life in that they have amino acids, sugars, the building blocks of DNA, phospholipids, carbohydrates, and even a semi-permeable membrane. They were even reported to reproduce by budding, but couldn't be cultured like microorganisms. This has interesting implications in that other experiments, such as the famous Miller-Urey experiment, required a strong energy source like electricity to simulate lightning in Earth's early atmosphere. But in this experiment, seemingly far more than the building blocks of life were achieved simply by using sunlight. The one wonders about the strength of the sun's light during abiogenesis compared to today, which was something on the order of 30% weaker. This report would show that you can get close to life with the right chemicals and some sunlight. And if the path from protocells to actual cells can be identified, then there's one method for abiogenesis. And on its face, it seems straightforward. And we could then speculate comfortably that the universe must teem with microbial life. Some follow-up work has been done on these experiments. In 2013, another team repeated the work and found that the jivanu protocells do indeed occur, and in that experiment showed RNA-like material in the protocells, which ticks a box for the RNA world hypothesis. In this case, abiogenesis occurs in sunlight straightforwardly with the right chemicals, and then that sets the stage for the development of RNA inside protocells, which eventually leads to DNA and life arises. While this would answer the question of abiogenesis, it also has somewhat spooky implications. If it's so easy, then why the great silence? It gets worse if we detect independent abiogenesis of microbial life on Mars, Venus, Enceladus, Europa, or anywhere else in the solar system. If it's so easy, then where are the aliens, as Enrico Fermi famously asked? It could be so simple as a great filter. A fine candidate being the leap from prokaryotic to eukaryotic life having taken so long on Earth, over a billion years. It may be a great filter that makes complex life rare, but recent work seems to suggest that it's actually not that hard of a filter, so there is another possibility. It's a great filter that lies in front of all technologically advanced civilizations, that something we do in the future causes our extinction, or even the extinction of all life on our world. It may even be something that we do not foresee, a mistake waiting for us and all civilizations in the galaxy where some advanced technology in the future takes a path that no one foresaw, and extinction comes upon us without us ever seeing it coming. Food for thought, indeed. Thanks for listening. I'm futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently sleepy from editing my own audio. Yes, it even happens to me, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we sleep.